Some months, you're flooded with jobs and make multiple placements. Other months, a big fat zero. This feast and famine cycle isn't just stressful, it's holding you back and keeping you from real predictable growth. Here's the good news. There's a reason it's happening, and you can fix it. The 7-Figure Freedom Scorecard is a free tool designed for recruitment business owners. In less than 10 minutes, it evaluates your firm across the 6 key pillars of sustainable growth: clients, candidates, team, operations, marketing, and strategy. Your personalized scorecard will reveal what's working and what's broken, and the fastest way to build a recruitment business that generates consistent 7-figure revenue month after month. Stop riding the revenue roller coaster and take the free scorecard now at recruitmentcoach.com/scorecard.
I think part of it is being brought up by a single mom who worked her butt off. She actually went to undergrad while my sister and I were born. She became a nurse. She actually would work nights, and we would go and stay at a neighbor's house at night so that then she would be at home when we would be getting home from school to spend time with us. I've always been around hardworking women. For me, I've just always been competitive with that I want to make more money every single year. I want to be able to not only live the life that I want to live, but I'd be able to give that back.
Larissa Gerlach didn't become a top performer by accident. Early in her recruiting career, she made a decision. She was going to outwork everyone around her, master the fundamentals, and trust the process.
We had to make 200 calls a week, or I should say I held myself accountable to 200 calls a week. My goal was to make 50 calls every day. And so I actually was really trying to get to 250, but I always knew that there's going to be, you know, there's going to be numbers that are incorrect. There's going to be receptionists that aren't going to pass you through. You know, you put in the reps, everything else just comes.
Within a few years, Larissa was the top salesperson at a fast-growing investor-backed recruiting firm. Her number stood out so much that the CFO reached out and asked her,
"What are you doing? This is incredible, right?" And I started to get questions from the C-suite of that recruiting firm of like, how do we replicate what Larissa's doing?
That conversation led to her being asked to design and deliver the firm's sales training program. Eventually, she led nationwide learning and development initiatives to maximize performance across offices as the company scaled. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today's interview is a really special one because my guest, Larissa, is a member of our coaching team here at Recruitment Coach. With over 15 years in executive recruitment, Larissa runs her own recruiting firm, the Vibrant Talent Group, specializing in recruiting for marketing, product, and design roles in San Francisco and New York. In this episode, you'll hear how discipline and metrics compound over time, and what it really takes to develop high-producing sales and recruiting teams.
Every morning in our morning meetings, we started with role plays. Every single day. There's a reason they do that.
By the way, Larissa and I are launching a recruitment training program to help new recruiters start billing faster and experienced recruiters to maximize their performance. To learn more, visit recruitmentcoach.com/training. Hi, Larissa. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for having me on, Mark.
Absolutely. I'm excited to finally do this. And because we've been working together now for almost a year, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Awesome. And so I'm excited about, I think I know most of your story, but I'm excited to fill in some of the details, but also to share your journey and insights with our audience. So take me back to the beginning, Larissa. How did you get into recruiting?
Yeah. Like most of us, I fell into it. I actually have a fashion degree. I went to the Fashion Institute in New York. And I'll be honest, the reason I went that direction was that I've always just been really fascinated by people and the decisions that they've made and why people show up the way that they do in life. And, you know, I grew up in the New York area. You're very influenced by fashion by growing up in that area. And, you know, that's where I started my career. That's the first 5 years of my career was in that space. And I sat in mostly in wholesale, which meant that I was selling to the buyers of smaller boutiques as well as larger department stores. And I loved it. I love being in front of people. I love being around creative folks. And What I didn't love, of course, was that that was when the recession hit. And that is, unfortunately, in early 2009, I was laid off. And it was just it was a rough time to be in that industry. And by 2010, I definitely started to think this isn't a long-term fit. And so I honestly just started to interview. And I said, I love working with people. I actually worked in commission always. I liked that. I just sort of liked that feeling of the harder I work, the more money I'm going to make. And I liked being in that, you know, around creative people. And I landed in recruiting that way. So I just, you know, I actually went to a recruiting firm that flipped it on me and said, well, would you ever want to be a recruiter? And I remember I came home that day and to my boyfriend, who's now my husband, and I was just like, oh, this is so annoying. Like, I don't want to be a recruiter, right? And and he was like, well, why, right? Like, you know, and it was really because I just didn't know anything about recruiting. You know, I ended up actually interviewing at several recruiting firms then after that. So they kind of opened my eyes and I just sort of was like, well, maybe. And that's how I landed at my first company was, and it was, you know, specifically more in that creative marketing world. And then the rest is history.
Absolutely. All right. Awesome. So when was this, Larissa?
Yeah. So I landed officially in recruiting in 2011.
Okay.
And yeah, yeah. And so, initially interviewed in the recruiting firm, that recruiting firm that I finally was hired at and chose to go to was a national firm. I interviewed initially in their New York offices. That's actually where the founder sat, or two founders actually sat, and a lot of their, you know, long-term employees. But they were just opening an office in Washington, D.C. And I actually was moving with my then boyfriend to Washington, D.C. And so for good or bad, right, it was a great opportunity to join a already established recruiting firm, but in a brand new office. So no candidates or clients in that database in that city.
Okay, awesome. So it's a great challenge. And how did it go in that first job?
It was the positive is that so when I joined them, Washington, D.C. was their 12th office that they were opening. And I can share just in terms of the future of what it looked like is they while I was there for over 4 years, they went from 12 to 25 offices. So they went through very significant growth while I was there. But that first year, I didn't know what I was walking into, of course. And it was $40,000 a year base, you know, salary. And then you had your commission on top of that. And it was, you know, sort of a layered commission. So you had to really hit like a certain revenue before you even started to make any sort of commission. And so year one, I made basically $40,000. I really, you know, it was so I sat in a recruiter seat. We were 180 desks. So there was another person that was doing business development at that point. And it's rough. I think as everybody knows, you know, I when I think about hiring or when I think about training, now that I look back, you have to give people at least 6 months in the seat to really see any kind of results. And then, of course, neither one of us had any recruiting experience that we got hired into. There was a third and then a fourth person that got hired on that first year. So there was four of us total in that office by the end of the first year. But the reality is it really didn't take off until year two. And I could tell you that year one, I still remember we actually didn't have a manager for Washington, D.C. There was a regional manager over the entire Northeast. And I remember that he would come to visit once a month. And I just remember that year one, I cried in the meeting and I just was like,
oh,
I can't
bless
keep,
you.
Right? Like, but I can't keep making $40,000. Like, this is, you know. And he was like, Larissa, I promise you're doing all the right things. You're hitting your metrics every day. You're doing the right things. It will happen. And so I just stayed. And it is, I think that is probably part of the reason why I'm so passionate about training and why I'm so passionate about, you know, really following, you know, like if somebody, you know, okay, if I'm told this is going to work, just keep doing it because it will. And then it took off, right? And then I really saw sort of the fruits of my labor.
Okay. Can you remember like during that first year, you're working really hard, it's not working out. Like what's going through your mind at that stage?
Well, I was young. And luckily, we lived in a cheaper apartment and, you know, we didn't have any crazy expenses at that point. Honestly, though, it was, you know, there was definitely thoughts of like, is recruiting right for me? Is this the right career? Should I continue to be doing this? You know, I had just, though, experienced the recession and layoffs and, you know, we were still sort of coming out of that and starting to feel confident in 2011. And so, you know, part of it for me was just like, I'm just to be lucky to have a job, you know? And so it was just like, okay, I'm just going to keep putting my head down and keep doing what I've been told works.
Yeah, it's so funny because I felt similarly when I first started. I was like, what have I gotten into? This is like way harder than I thought it was going to be. And it didn't click for me straight away. And so I had a huge amount of doubt in that first, you know, 6 to 12 months for sure. So what was the turning point where things started to, you know, take off for you?
And I feel so similar to what you just said. And I would say that is truly, maybe this is an over-exaggeration, but I truly wouldn't be surprised if 90% of people feel exactly the same way. That first 6 months and that first year are really hard in recruiting. It seems so straightforward, right? You just get people jobs, right? Like, how right. could it be that hard? But it is, right? And it's a lot of human psychology for ourselves as well as for our candidates and our clients. And, you know, and so I tell everybody that I've ever trained, everybody that I've ever mentored, anybody that's just been a colleague of mine, just put your head down, do the metrics, follow what you know, what you've been told works, and it will happen. And so I started to see a major turnaround year two. By year three, I hit their president's club and I got to go to Mexico and I made an incredible money that I never imagined that I would make at that point. You know, at that point, I was, you know, 4 or 5 times what my base salary was, right? I was, you know, for me, I've always been very conservative with my money. My husband and I, or still my boyfriend at that time, but we were living still off of that $40,000. And so,
that's,
you know,
fantastic.
Something that I'm really proud of is that 4 years of recruiting turned into me having a down payment to move to California and buy a house, which
wow.
I think most of us all know, right? California is not cheap.
Absolutely. That's cool.
It's because I squirreled every dollar of that commission away at that point.
Good for you. So tell me then, what, I know you said like head down, do the work, hit your metrics, follow the game plan. But like, looking back, what do you think were some of the keys to being able to hit President's Club and, you know, start really thriving in that job?
I've said this my entire life. I strongly believe that I'm just a hard worker, that anybody could do it, right? But I am incredibly competitive with myself. I actually never played a sport in my life. There's a lot of conversation around that, you know, you do well in recruiting if you have played a sport prior, which I completely understand where that thought process comes from. But for me, I have always been incredibly competitive with myself. And I will say that first recruiting firm, there was a list published every single week and we were ranked in our revenue every week. And I was so competitive. I wanted to be at the top of that list. Honestly, for me, it was like, I'm going to do more metrics than what you tell me to do, right? And so I can still remember that, you know, that we had to interview a minimum of 10 people per week, right? And so you're putting 10 new candidates into the system every single week. We were focused heavily on MPCing and we had to come to our board meetings and every morning with a strong MPC that our sales team could sell. And once you got sort of understanding who, right, you really got a good feeling for what types of candidates were a strong MPC, I would come in real strong so that I would say that I got to a point where like 90% of my MPC candidates were getting placed at that point. And keep in mind also that first recruiting firm was, it was both freelance or contract as well as direct hire. And so, you know, I did a lot of those candidates were like quick, you know, start next week, you know, whatever it might be, like freelance situations. You know, I always stuck to, okay, I know that I have to get a certain number of submissions into my roles because we know that, you know, submissions equal interviews equal starts, you know, at that point. And so I was very focused on that. You know, I'm not advocating for overtime, but I will say back then there was no laptops. I had a desktop. I had to be physically in the office to do the work. And I would go on the weekends and not to do work, but I would catch up on all my admin stuff. So I didn't have to waste time on admin during the week. I could just go.
We have so much in common, Larissa. This is funny when I hear you talking, because it reminds me of my first couple of years in recruiting as well. I got off to a slow start and then, you know, became, one of the top people in my office. And, but yeah, same, like going in at the weekends, starting early, finishing late, going in at the weekends. But what I'm curious about is, and where does that, you said you're very competitive with yourself, but also you were looking at the league table going, I want to be at the top. What about your, like, what do I need to know about your growing up and your childhood and your personality? Like, where did that come from?
Yeah. Single mom, but didn't have a lot of money. And so I think part of it was like, I'm always wanting to make enough money that, I'll be honest, right? Like I can remember times where we were at the grocery store and it was like, she had a calculator out and it was like, we have X amount of money. We can only spend this much money. And it was, you know, I would cry like, I want, you know, my mom loves this story. Like, I would cry because I wanted kiwis. And she's like, we can't afford kiwi, right? Like that's
that's very specific.
But
okay.
It's so specific. But I think part of it is being brought up by a single mom who worked her butt off. She actually went to undergrad while my sister and I were born. She became a nurse. She actually would work nights and we would go and stay at a neighbor's house at night. So that then she would be at home and we would be getting home from school to spend time with us. But I look back at that, I'm like, when did she slept basically while we were at school, right? But I think that for me, it's just I've always been around hardworking women. And you know, I think for me, I've just always been competitive with like that. I want to make more money every single year. I want to be able to not only live the life that I want to live, but to be able to give that back to my family into the future. And I think for me, it's interesting kind of, you know, as we'll talk more about my mentoring and my training, but it's something that's just always been in me is my sort of act of love or my, you know, when you talk about how what mean, you know, when you think about your acts of service or your acts of, you know, the way you like to receive love or the way you like to give love, for me it's an action. I like to show up and I like to support people. I like people to feel supported by me, and I think that also is coming from a mom that I feel like just went above and beyond for us.
Awesome. Wow. Yeah. Go Larissa's mom. That's what a great role model. That's fantastic. So Larissa, when did you flip into the sales side of the desk?
Yeah. Okay. So what I will share is that 4 years into recruiting and doing both the freelance placements as well as full-time, what I started to miss is the longer-term relationships that I had in fashion. And what I mean by that is, right, even in fashion, even if I worked for a different brand, it would be the same buyers at the department stores, right? And it's these longer-term relationships. You started to really get to know each other. And what I found, especially in the freelance world, is that it's high turnover, right? You're sort of like, okay, do you want the job or not, right? Are you available to start on Monday or not? And I miss that longer term. I also will say that because I started in an office that was pretty small and we all just sat right next to each other, I knew what my business development and my sales managers were doing on a day-to-day basis. I saw their training as well, and I really wanted to learn the other side of the desk. My husband and I moved from Washington, D.C. out to San Francisco, I made a conscious effort or a conscious decision, I should say, to transition to the sort of the other side of the desk at that point. I had a choice to stay at my current recruiting firm that also had an office in San Francisco, or to start at a new recruiting firm. And quite honestly, I was going to have to start over regardless at that point. They were very clear that you're coming to a new office, you're basically starting from ground zero again, you know? And, what I decided was I'm going to go to another firm. And I chose actually a recruiting firm that had that marketing and design focus, but they actually originally started the recruiting firm I went to originally started in New York in the fashion industry. And it just sort of felt like I could take my like first love and now my second love and sort of combine it. And I will share with you, I got to, you know, to that second recruiting firm and there was essentially next to no training in place as compared to what I was used to from that first recruiting firm. But the positive is I knew exactly what to do because I knew the metrics that my salespeople were held to. That is really ultimately it was a direct competitor is where it.
Here's what I keep hearing from clients who have switched to Recruiter Flow. They are executing faster, not working longer hours, but using a platform that just makes sense. Recruiter Flow is an AI-first ATS and CRM built specifically for recruitment agencies and executive search firms. No confusing menus, no endless buttons you'll never use. When someone new joins your team, they're up and running in hours, not weeks. And here's the thing. When your recruiters spend less time fighting with software, they spend more time doing what actually matters, having conversations with clients and candidates. Several of our clients at Recruitment Coach have made the switch, and they're telling me it's transforming their operations. If you want to see it in action, book a demo at recruitmentcoach.com/recruiterflow. That's recruitmentcoach.com/recruiterflow. You already understand the benefits of posting video content on LinkedIn. The problem is time. After all, you're a recruiter, not a full-time content creator. Trusted Voice Video is built for busy recruitment business owners who know that video matters, but they don't want another job added to their plate. One 30-minute session per month gives you 30 days of short-form video content. We plan the topics, guide the conversation, edit the footage, and deliver ready-to-post videos. You'll never be stuck wondering what to say. You'll never worry about how you look or sound. We coach you through the session so you come across as clear, confident, and credible, even if you hate seeing yourself on camera. My colleague Sanjay manages the whole process. He already produces this podcast and my own video content, so if you like my content, then why not let us create yours as well? If you want your content working for you 24/7, head to recruitmentcoach.com/video and book a free strategy call.
Is, you know, where I went.
Fantastic. And so, by the way, what were the sales metrics that were kind of like your formula for success there?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So what my first firm required that I just did at my second firm, even though it wasn't a requirement, was, and now I have to really dig deep. I should have prepared for this and look back at maybe some of the metrics, but
to the best of your
memory. From my memory, we had to make 200 calls a week, or I should say I held myself accountable to 200 calls a week. This was also prior to anybody having LinkedIn Recruiter or LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Most of the phone calls I was making was you were just Googling and trying to find the phone number for the front desk, right? And then you're just calling through that way. And of course, every single phone call was followed up with an email. And the way that I structured my day was my goal was to make 50 calls every day. And so I actually was really trying to get to 250, but I always knew that there's going to be, you know, there's going to be numbers that are incorrect. There's going to be receptionists that aren't going to pass you through, you know? And so I always kind of overplanned my days. And so my goal would be, I'm going to get through 50 calls a day. All I would do all morning long is the phone calls. I wouldn't do the emails. And then I would do my follow-up emails in the afternoon. You know, outside of those metrics, you know, that everything else comes with that. You put in the reps, everything else just comes. And I knew that from watching my coworkers in the past.
Awesome. And then, so what happened at that second job then in terms of your sales career?
Well, I always laugh. I'm like, you never, in some ways, right? I knew exactly what my recruiters were capable of at that point. And so I was like, you never want to see me coming to your desk as a salesperson at that point, because you knew if I was coming up to you as a recruiter, I was going to be hard on you and say, I worked my butt off to get this job rec in the door. Why haven't you submitted candidates? And if you haven't, I'm going to sit down with you and I'm going to help you find the right candidates. And so I honestly, pretty early on, was my recs, you know, my job recs that I was bringing in the door were the most qualified, and I was getting the highest placement percentage because I knew, right, as a recruiter past, right, I knew what a qualified job needed to look like. I knew what, you know, was the potential out of my recruiting firm, you know, my recruiting team. And I just pushed, right? Like, you better fill my roles, right? But, you know, the reality too is, and I will say this, I always remember this, there was also a regional manager that would come and visit, you know, as well out there. And she was like, this whole office. And at that point, San Francisco's office probably had in, you know, for that second recruiting firm, about 25 maybe employees. And she was like, you open that front door, you always heard Larissa's voice. Always. You always heard me on the phone. But I think, too, the positive of that is when recruiters hear you working your butt off for them, they're motivated to fill your jobs. And they hear you MPCing their candidates and all of that, right? They're motivated to bring in even better MPCs the next day. And so, you know, I think that it all works together. But at the end of the day, you know, again, and I didn't have a, I will say that this second firm, they didn't rank their employees. I had no idea what anybody was doing around me. I didn't know what the other offices were doing at that point. So that second firm, they also had 12 offices when I started, did not grow as significantly and as fast as that first one. But that second one, I had no idea what anyone else was doing in any other office. And when I get an email from the CFO saying, what are you doing? This is incredible, right? And I started to get, you know, questions from the C-suite of that recruiting firm of like, how do we replicate what Larissa's doing? And so this was, you know, around the time when also the company was invested in by private equity. And now, you know, that private equity looked under the hood a little bit and it was a little messy, right? And so I got tapped at that point to help them head up the sales training initially.
Cool. This is awesome. So Larissa, so great. So you absolutely smashed it in the sales role at that company to the point that they were like, we need Larissa to train everyone else how to replicate that. And so tell me about that chapter then of how you transitioned into that internal training role.
For sure. Yeah. And I had no idea, right? They were like, you're our top salesperson. You're the fastest growing salesperson that we've ever had. And I'm like, really? Right? I don't know. I'm like, okay, that's great. But, the reality when they first came to me and said, what are you doing, is the exact same thing I just told you. I just said, I work hard. Like, I don't, you know, I don't have like any real secrets here. Like, I'm just working really hard. And so when they first tapped me to say, you know, will you do this training? I was like, I don't know if I could train people to work hard, but like, you know, but then once we got into it, I realized, oh, actually I have a lot of knowledge at this point. And, you know, and again, and it was sort of this like really natural feeling once I was in front of people or sitting next to them at their desks. It is truly my love language. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love this, right? it's It was just every single day was so, so fun. And so what that initially looked like was we put much better playbooks in place so that every single office had the exact same playbooks of, you know, the day you start as a business development manager, what is that, you know, initial 2-week onboarding look like? What is ongoing training look like? What are, we put scripts in place and how to overcome objections and, you know, all sorts of stuff. We also implemented a boot camp. A boot camp existed in a very minimal way prior to, so technically I attended a boot camp when I started at the firm, but it didn't necessarily, it wasn't very well built out. It was sort of like, come to our New York offices and meet everybody, right? So we put a really thorough boot camp in place, and which meant that every new hire was, you know, brought to a very, you know, to one office where we put on a 3-day boot camp, and it was like super intensive in person. And then my role was to travel to all of our offices, and I did in-person training, which is literally I would sit next to the, you know, and as they made their calls and as they did their emails and their prospecting and all of that, right? And I would give them feedback and encourage them on how they can move quicker. And, you know, after they would, have an objection, then we would stop for a second and sort of talk, you know, about, okay, how could we have done that differently or better? And so it started with me focused in just doing sales training. And then at whatever point it was like, wait, you have recruiting experience too, right? Because they saw me as a salesperson. They saw me initially as their top salesperson, right? And like, how do we continue to replicate this? And then it was like, wait a second, you're going to these offices. You can also be doing recruiter training. And so then I would be sitting in on interviews and, right, like helping them source and all of that and overcoming objections and all of that too. We'd go out on, for both business development and recruiters, I'd go out on client visits with them. We'd prep for those client visits. I'd be there with them. We'd do follow-up after. And then what's interesting is what you didn't hear from me at this point is that I had not managed anybody at that point in my career, but they started to say, well, you're going in person. Why don't you start to at least do some training for these managers in each of these offices and make sure that they really know how to run like an effective one-on-one, how to give real-time feedback, how to you know, train their teams on overcoming objections and things like that, right? And, you know, a lot of that, of course, was because of that training experience. It was like, yes, train our managers on how they can train that when you're not in office, right, how they can be training their team.
Absolutely. Okay, there's a lot here I want to unpack. So first of all, tell me about this playbook. Like, what does that look like? Is that a ring binder? Is that a PDF document? Like, what is that? What's in that document?
Okay, so the play that like whole playbook was initially a 3-ring binder that then became a full LMS. You know, and so it all ended up being digital, you know, at some point. And so to be honest with you, it was a lot of what you and I are doing right now, a lot of recording of myself. It was also, and I think as you know, I'm speaking to the choir, but people learn in different ways. And so some like to have the visual learning, some need it to be written out step by step. Some, you know, right, like they want to visually see you walk through it on your computer and how you're doing it. Just so what we would do in that LMS is, you know, we were building out for every step of that training from, okay, how are we planning a really successful business development day? And what does that look like? And how am I planning it? And how do I think about my day? And I literally would show, okay, this is what my calendar looks like. And this is how I would time block my day, and this is how I would plan my day for, you know, plan my following day. And even, you know, so that, you know, that playbook was it became really significant size playbook. And, you know, that was trained out for several weeks. And then there was ongoing training, of course. And so we would be doing ongoing training. One of my favorite trainings is I call it the ABCs, right? You always be closing. And I mean, the reality, you know, that training can be run for both business development as well as recruiters. But my favorite, of course, I think my favorite has always been on the recruiter side of things and how you can always be closing those candidates from that very first conversation. But that's an example of something that I would do is sort of like ongoing training. Once you're in the desk, once you've learned kind of the basics, now it's sort of, okay, how can I up-level myself?
Fantastic. I love it. I think you, when was this, Larissa?
Yeah. Okay. So I moved to San Francisco in 2015. And so Then that would have been 2017 to 2019, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's funny because like you and I were on different parts of the world doing the same job, basically. So I started my training company, I mean, a long time before that, but I just, it gives me a kick to think about you were over in San Francisco and I was over here in the UK and I was going into recruitment company offices. I was doing the like boot camps. I was doing the desk coaching, listening to calls, going on client visits and all that stuff as well. I was curious with the desk coaching, did you actually have one of those headsets that you could plug into?
Oh yeah, of course.
Hear both sides of the conversation.
Absolutely. Of course. And it's funny because I mean, I was on the road. I traveled every other week. And and when anybody travels that often, you'd basically just have a bag full of stuff that you just bring everywhere you go. And I had that headset that I traveled with everywhere.
And so I had my training bag, I used to call it a training bag, with your whiteboard markers, your flip chart markers, your blue tack, your notes and everything for delivering the different sessions, the headset, all that stuff went in that bag and that kind of went everywhere. So I want to ask you about role plays because I know you're a fan and I'm a fan of role plays. Why do you think it's important to rehearse the different skills and conversations and kind of key moments, moments of truth in the placement process?
I'm a huge fan of role plays. And what I will say to you is, because I had that initial training from the first recruiting firm and I had all those objections, my second firm, when I went to them, they didn't have all those objections fully built out yet. And that was part of what I helped with. But I initially printed out every potential sales objection that I thought I would get. And I had it around my entire cubicle. And so then when I'd be on the phone and I would get an objection, I'd look into my cubicle and just refresh myself a little bit. I had it all pinned up. I had them printed out. My entire cubicle was covered in all the different potential objections, right? So, you know, we're not hiring right now. You're too expensive. We use another recruiting firm, right? All of those, right? And so I would have all of those in front of me. But of course, certainly as we know, reading bullet points that's not going to fix the long term. And so I have always been passionate about role plays. I know they're so uncomfortable. Nobody likes them initially. But I think if you've gone through, if you've trained with me ever, what you have definitely felt is that it's okay to mess up. It's okay to fumble your words. It's okay to say the wrong thing. What I always encourage in the role plays that I run is we not only get feedback from me, but I think it's also really helpful to get peer feedback. And I think that just also lowers sort of that feeling of like I'm being judged by the trainer, right? Of we're all just here to help and support each other. And of course, as we know, the more that you practice something before you even hit that potential objection, the better you're going to do in that live objection. Some of that stuff, you're going to hit those obvious objections pretty early on in your career, and the sort of I'm not hiring or we're using another recruiting firm type of objections. But then there's the what I call sort of like, role play 2.0, right? And that's kind of like, okay, now we've gotten to that next layer of objections, things like I don't want to, work on a retainer, I want contingent or, whatever. And so being able to confidently overcome that objection before you even hit it. You know, I think, you know, it's ultimately you're going to close more business that way. So why not? Right. I mean, for me, it always comes back to, I'm like, well, you can make more money. So why not just do the role play?
Exactly. Exactly. It's so, I agree 100% with what you're saying, because the thing is, and I've noticed this so many times, is it's one thing in the training room, like having the knowledge and being shown or explained how to do something. But then I would go, so we would do the, you know, the classroom part. And then I would go and sit beside, like next time I was in the office, let's say a month later, I would come and listen to them on the phone. And there was a huge gap between what they were supposed to be doing and what they actually were doing, right? Because when, you know, the knowledge didn't translate into actual skills development and behavior changes, you know, so I would be sitting there going, this isn't what we talked about. What's going on? And I feel like role plays are one of the things that help to bridge that gap and actually build the skill. Because, and when people say, oh, it's not like realistic, well, okay, but that doesn't mean that there's not value in it, because you're rehearsing. Like, think of it as, you know, if you were going to put on a performance of any kind, whether it's you know, a play or a presentation, let's say, to your colleagues or to a client or whatever, you wouldn't show up and deliver a presentation to a client without having like practiced and rehearsed it, right? That would be dumb, because you wouldn't perform as well. So this is just the same thing. You're just practicing. And if it's uncomfortable, well, that's good, because the job is uncomfortable, right? And so it's almost lowering your inhibitions and getting comfortable being uncomfortable. That's part of the value of the exercise. So I would encourage all our listeners, if you run teams or if you own a business with recruiters and salespeople, then like role play should be a regular thing that that we do. Anything you want to add to that before we move on?
I think that, you know, the only thing I'll just share is that I reflect back on that first recruiting firm and realize how much they had figured out, essentially, right? And so I shared with you that every morning in our morning meetings, we started with role plays every single day. And we would do both business development as well as recruiter role plays. But there's a reason they do that. There's a reason it worked. There's a reason that the company, you know, is now been sold and is a, you know, it's an incredible, you know, business, but there's a reason it works. And I encourage everybody to do that. And I would even say not to, it's okay. Like, we should be practicing our entire lives. I mean, I personally, I'm never going to be perfect. I'm never going to do everything, you know, I mean, we're always should be challenged. We always should be learning. I think the objections have slightly changed over the years as well, and how we're overcoming them. And, you know, technology has changed, and the way that we communicate is slightly changed as well. And so I think that role plays aren't necessarily just for somebody that's only the first 6 months into their career. I think it's something that you can really partake in your entire.
Definitely. Yeah, no, agree 100%. It evolves and changes. And so it's not static. Let me tell you this story, Larissa. I don't think I've ever shared this one. So you've probably heard me talk about one of my big clients when I was a trainer is called Amoria Bond. So they have offices in the US now. They started out in Manchester in England. Then they opened up in Amsterdam, then Germany. And I was training all those folks. They're now in Singapore and the US as well. And they believed in everything. This was a really well-aligned client, because everything I recommended, they would just implement immediately. And so it was really fun. I probably worked with them for about 10 years, and they grew from 15 people to 150 people in that time frame. And they're much, much bigger than that now. But there was a manager there I started coaching him one-to-one. I think he maybe had 3 people reporting to him. And eventually he was a group managing director, and he had like 80 people underneath him. And so shout out to Adam Standley, if you're listening. So Adam used to, on his drive into work because he had to commute from outside Manchester into work every day. He would call into one of his team members, and they never knew who it was going to be, but they had to be at work, ready to pick up the phone, because he would call one of them and be a client, and they'd role play taking a job order. And they always had to be ready and able to like absolutely nail it. They had to qualify the job. They had to negotiate the fee. They had to get the maximum commitment they could, like exclusivity, interview slots, and so on. And he did that every single day. He would call somebody and they would role play. So I think yeah, absolutely.
<That's> awesome.
So Larissa, you then went on to another firm to build a training program. Am I understanding that correctly?
So at that point, to be totally honest with you, I sort of felt like, okay, I've been recruiting, I've done business development, I've trained to how to do all of these things. But I personally have not managed yet. And I'll be totally honest with you, it was around that point where I started to realize I could do this on my own. And I started to think about going out on my own. But I felt like I still wanted to learn more before I could confidently go out on my own. After I left that training role, I went into a management position. And I managed basically a boutique recruiting firm. The founders were looking to move back overseas where they're originally from, and they were looking for somebody to really manage that day-to-day. And I'll share just kind of broadly, right? I went to that agency to manage and really to learn that aspect of it, and really to sort of feel like I cut my teeth on managing and building a team and all that. And then the last firm that I went to before I went out on my own was a fully retained executive search firm, which I also had not done yet. And so I truly at that point had taken some very deliberate moves to make sure that I felt like I was really well-rounded, before starting Vibrant Talent, my business now.
Got it. All right. Awesome. So before we talk about Vibrant Talent, were there any other, looking back at those different experiences, like what stands out to you as being kind of really pivotal to your future success?
Oh my goodness. Maybe you already know this about me, right? I'm not really great about bragging or like thinking about where I'm just like, I'm a hard worker. I struggle with like being able to pinpoint. Probably others around me do a better job at that. To me, it's like I put in the hard work and I've put in the time and I love being able to give that back to other people.
Awesome. So tell me about Vibrant Talent then.
Yeah. Okay. So at this point, right, 15 years of experience, specifically every place that I've recruited in has been focused within the broader sort of like marketing world. And so marketing could also mean creative roles. It could be, you know, advertising. I've gotten a little bit also into the product side of things as well. But starting Vibrant Talent, it has been a dream, honestly. Like I just shared, it's been a dream for a while now. I started it a little over 2 years ago. And specific focus ultimately at this point is that I am focused in the New York and San Francisco metro areas. It's the markets I know the best. I know the commutes. I know the cost of living. I know the competition. It also gives me a great reason to be home to see family in New York all the time. And it is specifically focused across marketing, product, and design roles.
And is that retained? Is it contingent? What's the setup?
I pause because I'm like, not contingent.
Okay.
How could you be on Mark Whitby's show and say contingent? I knew when I started Vibrant Talent that there was no way that I was going to run around after clients that weren't committed to partnering with me. And so the majority of my business is focused either on engaged or retained. I also have an RPO sort of start piece to my business too, where I'm working on a monthly retainer. So anybody that I'm working with, I am either requiring some type of an upfront payment to engage my services and to make sure that my clients are engaged in that placement. Or, right, they're paying me on a monthly basis, you know, but that's typically because there are several roles that they plan to fill over, you know, several months.
Great. So I love this. What's been the biggest eye opener for you, like going from a top performer, but working for another company to actually running your own business?
A lot. It seemed so easy when you didn't have to, right?
Right, exactly.
I'm sure you feel similarly, right? It just seems so easy. You know what? I will be honest with you. My weaknesses is that I'm not super operationally minded. I know how to do the business development. I know how to do recruiting, right? But QuickBooks is really just the bane of my existence, right? Not, you know, I think that piece was not, I would also say, you know, I the positive for me is I walked into these different firms that already had the technology in place. And so I had to make a lot of decisions on what technology I was going to invest in. And I just wanted it to work. Again, not operationally minded. I don't want to mess around in technology. I just want it to work. So some of that stuff has been, you know, tougher. You know, that's definitely been tougher for me. I also love it so much. I love that every sort of fruits of my labor, every dollar that I make, every effort that's put in is for my business.
Yeah. It's so another thing we have in common is the, like, I'm better at the marketing, business development, client stuff, and not the operational stuff, which is why I'm very grateful to have Lisa as our COO.
It's amazing.
Lisa, yes. Killian, and Rachel is our ops director. So, because I do think, like, there are rare individuals who just are really well-rounded and can do, you know, can turn their hand to anything. But I think that's quite rare. Most of us entrepreneurs, like, have certain things that we're really good at and then glaring weaknesses in other areas. And it's so hard for one person to, you know, to do everything extremely well. So, so that's been my learning journey. It's taken me too long to learn that lesson. I went too long trying to be a one-man band and, you know, and not really hitting my stride because I was, you know, pulled back into the things that I'm actually not that good at. Yeah. So let's talk about a chapter where we met. So I know how my version of this story, but what's your version of the story of joining Recruitment Coach?
I mean, I slid into your DMs. right. I going out on my own has been so amazing, but what I immediately missed was the human connection on some level. And so I definitely leaned into joining some communities, but what I also missed even more was the mentor and the coaching and all, you know, I miss that. Even as a manager in my past two roles, I still got to do a ton of that, of course. And I missed it so much. And you and I've talked about this, but when I started Vibrant Talent, I actually initially started it with training and coaching as part of my services. But the reality of it was that I was going to have to then sell both my recruiting services as well as my coaching services. It just didn't really make a lot of sense. And so I sort of pulled back on you know, considering doing that on my own. And you posted on LinkedIn, right, that you were looking to add a coach to the team. I have been, I really have been a fan since you started the podcast. I've been listening to your, I've actually told, I will say, I mean, because you started in 2019, and at that time, I was just in that transition coming out of the coaching into working at the, you know, as the manager at that smaller agency. But because the founders were really out of the day-to-day, they, honestly, I look back, I'm like, how lucky was I? They were involved in payroll and operations, all the things that I hated, right? But I wanted to be able to learn, you know, how a recruiting agency owner should be running, because I felt like that's really the role I was in some ways stepping into. And so I've been listening to you for quite some time. I knew that the way that we thought about recruiting and the way that you thought about coaching was very similar to the way that I thought about it. And so when I saw you post about needing an additional coach, I just reached out and was, I don't know if I'm the right person, but I'm going to shoot my shot because I miss it so much and I love it. And I knew that whatever content that you had, I would feel aligned with.
I love hearing that story because,
similarly?
yeah. Let me tell you my side of that same story. So, as you know, in our program, and maybe our listeners don't know, but we offer a combination of, like weekly group coaching with me, as well as office hours where I'm available multiple times a week to help people, give feedback, answer questions, help them keep moving forward with their business. We also have a learning management system with like tons of courses and videos and templates, SOPs, resources. But I really believe in the power of one-to-one coaching, and that the level of like the relationship, the really in-depth relationship that you can develop with a coach one-on-one, as well as the accountability and someone who's really going to help you stay on track and focused and keep that momentum going, is super valuable. So I wanted to offer that to our clients as well. So the first few people who joined me to expand on that last year were people I already knew, but we were still reaching capacity and I needed somebody else. So it was the first time I was going to need to kind of like, you know, go out and hire somebody who I didn't already know. And my bar was very, very high, Larissa, because I wanted someone who, it was such a specific brief. I wanted someone who had direct recruiting experience running a desk, right? Had entrepreneurial experience running their own business, and had training and coaching experience as well. So like, the Venn diagram is, you know, and those things overlapping, right? It's hard. There's not a ton of people who fit that description. And so I did post on LinkedIn, and I also posted the job on LinkedIn. That didn't work. I got hundreds of people who are interested, but nobody who was like what I was like. I got some really good, people with very impressive coaching credentials, more impressive than mine for sure, but with no recruiting experience. And so immediately discounted those. And I got, I actually got two finalists, yourself and one other person who's also a fan of the podcast and who's been on the podcast and who, you never know, like the door is open, Lauren, if you're listening to this, because when we're expanding again, I might tap your shoulder. But Larissa, based on your extensive training coaching experience and the fact we just hit it off when we connected, then you were the obvious choice for this role. So what's been your experience of, now that you've been on the inside of our community, what's been your experience?
First of all, thank you. I did not know that. It's the first time you've shared that with me. So I thank you. And I still think every day I'm like, okay, I want to represent recruitment coach to the best way I can. And you know, I mean, I just, you've created an incredible platform and an incredible community and incredibly respected in the recruiting industry. And so I didn't know that. And I appreciate you sharing that. I thought, you know, potentially I was the only person messaged you.
You were not the... You're one of a very small number of people who had what I was looking for, but
the bill, right? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. My experience has been, well, one, I've been really impressed by how much you've built out, right? Like the amount of content that is available to somebody that comes into the, you know, that joins the, whether it's the Apex or, right? I mean, it's incredible the amount of content that you already have. On top of that, I think what makes it so different than most coaching programs is that you aren't just delivering, here's the content, but it is incredibly, like you said, it's, you have to still have those one-on-one touches. You have to have that follow-up. Even, right, I mean, that's great that there's content out there for, let's just say, how to write a really strong email, right, and marketing content. But then you're offering office hours where you can have your copy critiqued. And the reality is that we could all read training and we can all think that we're following the training in the right way. But then, you know, in action, right, when we actually are doing it, is it's a slightly different story. And so I love that. As anybody that comes into the community and anybody that's coming in to be coached, right, is getting this incredible wealth of information. They are not only getting connected to the LMS, but many of them even say to me, like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that Mark was going to actually be the person that is running these weekly trainings and these weekly office hours. And you're still incredibly involved on a day to day. And you know every single person that's going through the coaching program. And I think that that is a massive difference than what you see in any other program. And I will say, I mean, that testimonial wise, right, I've had many, many people that I'm now coaching, you know, through your program that have said to me that they've done other coaching and it never worked. And this is so different than they've ever experienced with any other program.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, just on the point of knowing everybody personally, I remember I joined a coaching program. There's coaching programs for coaches too, right? And which sounds kind of weird when you think about it. But I joined one of the most famous coaches for coaches in the world. And it was a big investment, like way more than what we charge. And I got the feeling that if I bumped into him in the street, he wouldn't have a clue who I was, right? I really felt like disconnected and not like, a number rather than a colleague or a part of the community. So to me, it was really important that I wanted to always personally know all the people that we're working with and, you know, have a connection. The thing I love best is the quality of this peer group and the people who we have attracted. I feel very grateful that we've attracted such awesome clients, and how they show up and they contribute and they share strategies and playbooks and templates and, you know, their own techniques every week. Our clients are sharing their knowledge with each other. And that's, I think, the greatest thing, because no one person can know everything. Like, I feel like, even though I've been doing this a long time, I'm still learning. But what I do know is that, you know, the combined knowledge and experience of our community as a group, we definitely know everything there is to know about recruiting. And all aspects and every marketing strategy, all the new technologies, AI, the different tools available, the different styles of running a recruiting business is definitely covered within our group. So, Larissa, final thing I wanted to chat with you about today is that I'm excited about our latest collaboration, which is grown out of the coaching program. And so how this came about is we keep getting asked by our clients to train their team. And for a long time, I said no, because I just don't have the bandwidth. And you can spread yourself too thin, right? And trying to do too many different things. So but I always felt like I... disappointed that we couldn't meet that need, because it's such an important, you know, you have people who are running a recruiting business and they recognize the importance. I mean, they obviously, because they're hiring us, they value coaching. They believe in the value of coaching and the value of training. But, you know, as a small recruiting business owner, who, like, I'd say the majority, even the owners who are scaling, they still run a desk, at least like 75% of them do. It's hard then to onboard and train new team members, right? So I felt bad that we couldn't offer that solution. And so that's why I'm excited about the new recruiter training program that you're going to be leading. So tell me from your point of view, when you're working with entrepreneurs, whether it's in our program or others who you know that are trying to scale, what are the biggest pain points or problems that they encounter when it comes to hiring their own team?
First, we always laugh about this as recruiters. Sometimes we're the worst at being able to hire our own staff, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So sometimes it's even just initially finding the right folks. But then the reality is that as an entrepreneur and as a founder, you're pulled in so many different directions, right? You're focused on, okay, I need to bring in business to this company, right? We need to be making money and filling the roles. I also need to worry about the operations and the technology. And what about AI? And right, like there's so many different things that we should be concerned about as founders and as owners. And often training goes to the wayside because that feels like not something that is going to make us a dollar right now, right? And it feels like a big undertaking. I think too, most founders, honestly, I think, you know, I not to speak to everybody in the program right now, but I think that most of our agency owners don't necessarily feel confident to do training for their teams. They sort of feel like, well, I'm still figuring it out, right? Or, and I also think that, you know, most people don't maybe have a natural, you know, education or teaching bone in them, right? And so, you know, I would say that most are just struggling, one, with the time to be able to do it. The second is, what do I even train on? And third is, how do I do it, right? But what you and I both know is that a well-trained team will make an incredible impact on the bottom line. And we didn't even talk about this, right? But I mean, going back to my training days, you know, I've trained salespeople that are now billing over $2 million a year, right? Like that is, I mean, if we could all hire somebody that's going to bring in $2 million of revenue, I mean, I'm sure we would all hire immediately to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it takes time, but investing in somebody's training will immediately really impact your bottom line.
Exactly. And so I think you hit the nail on the head. It's number one, the time, right? It's taking time because when you're onboarding and training team members, it's pulling you off of your own desk. So at the same time as your overheads are going up, your own production can suffer, which is not a comfortable place to be. So I think that's a huge factor is even if someone wants to do it themselves and actually they're good at training and mentoring, it's just the time to be able to do that. Then the second part is actually building up. Like you and I have both taken years to build a body of work, you know, materials, content that, you know, it could be delivered in a structured way. But if you're a biller, and then you're building a team, you have to create that from scratch, right? Now you have to build out your like training modules and what am I going to teach day by day and week by week? And what, you know, what's the best way to communicate these ideas? And that is very time consuming and sort of overwhelming for most owners. And then there's the preparation. And then finally, as you say, like, I have noticed that I think there's a tipping point where you have enough scale that you actually can hire an internal person who's going to drive learning and development, and you almost create your own learning and development department, right? And hire someone like you were in your previous role. But until you get to that sort of critical mass, then what typically happens is it falls either to the owners, directors, or managers to just kind of cobble something together and or, you know, do their own training. And it seems it's quite ad hoc and the quality is variable and the amount of time that gets dedicated to it is sort of like reactive rather than having a structured, really well-run training program that just runs consistently, that gets people billing consistently more quickly, gets them up to speed, gets them cash flow positive, turns them into self-sufficient billers. Because that's the other thing that owners tell me is they find it frustrating to handhold people, and they find it frustrating to be interrupted with questions all the time. And they want to do what they do best, right? Which is probably doing deals, winning new clients, and leading the team and like being the strategy person. So unfortunately, that means that the team's development suffers. And if you think about how long it can take someone to get up to speed, like every month they're not billing, that's costing you, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 in unrealized revenue. So I feel like I've talked for too long. Is there anything you want to add to that?
You know, the only piece that I was going to add to that, that I'm really excited about with our team coaching program, is that often you might have a small team. Maybe there's 2-3 people on your team. And I really believe in the group setting. I think that the power of learning from other folks and being able to learn from other people that are in a similar boat to you, right? Like, can really be helpful. And so what I'm really excited about this program too is that, you know, it's going to be folks that are in varying industries and varying types of recruiting. But the reality is that it's all a similar motion, right? It's all a similar, we're all going to hit the similar objections, and we're all struggling with, you know, similar day-to-day priorities and all of that. And I think what is going to be really exciting is to not feel like you're being coached in sort of a funnel of just 2 or 3 other people, but being able to be, you know, coached and trained in a situation where you can learn a lot from your peers that are in other recruiting firms.
That is a great point. Absolutely. Like, if you only have 1 or 2 people in your team who need to be trained, then yeah, exactly. It's not the same dynamic as if you're in a larger cohort and you're learning not just from the trainer, but each other as well. It's a lot more fun, and you can get a lot more out of that. So listen, for anyone listening who wants to get the details of the program, recruiter training program that we're now offering, then check out recruitmentcoach.com/training. I'll include a link in the show notes, but recruitmentcoach.com/training. You can find out all the details, and hopefully we'll get to meet some of your team members in the near future. Larissa, we could go on. Like, I think we're going to have to do a part 2. Maybe we'll reconnect on the podcast in a few months, but I really, really enjoyed that. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and your insights.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Fantastic. And I'll speak to you soon. Like, we talk, we connect on a regular basis, either on Slack or
Slack, right?
Yeah, exactly. So awesome. Have an amazing weekend. And thank you so much, Larissa. I'm really grateful to have you, you know, as part of our team. And you bring so much value to our clients. So thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank you. I feel so lucky to have even fallen in. I feel like I fell into this situation, and it's incredible. I'm so happy to be here. And thank you so much for having me as part of the training program. And I'm so excited for this sort of like next, you know, iteration of our training together.
Definitely. Yes. It's going to be awesome. All right. Take care, Larissa. Talk to you soon. Here are 2 key takeaways from my conversation with Larissa. One for recruiters, one for business owners. First, for recruiters working inside a firm, don't aim to hit your KPIs, aim to beat them. If the expectation is 200 calls, plan for 250. Build in a buffer, because some calls won't connect and some days just won't go to plan. Larissa separated herself early by holding herself to a higher standard than her company expected and doing more activity than everyone else around her. That is within your control. Second, for leaders who want to develop top talent, training isn't a slide deck. Larissa didn't build Recruiter performance simply by writing the sales playbook. She did write the playbook and taught the playbook. Then she sat beside people, plugged her headset into their phone, listened to live calls, role-played objections, gave feedback in real time. If you want your team to bill more, listen to them on the phone and let them hear you on the phone. And if you want Larissa to run a structured 18-week sales and or recruiting training for your team, visit recruitmentcoach.com/training. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Remember to subscribe and I'll see you next time.